Where do you go for comics new and old? Where do you see your favorite television and movie stars? And where do you go to see the best in cosplay? Wizard World Comic Con. Wizard World Comic Con offers live entertainment and gaming, comics new and old, cosplay, toys and memorabilia, and a chance to meet your favorite television and movie stars. For news, celebrity updates, and tickets to future shows, go to wizardworld.com. Don't feel like paying full price? No problem. Use promo code CANDAIR at checkout to get 10% off your tickets. So, where are you going to go for your pop culture fix? Wizard World Comic Con. Go to wizardworld.com for tickets.
I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the bug that splatters across the windshield of crime. I am Darkwing Duck, and I'm listening to the Canned Air Podcast. How about you?
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And joining us today, returning to the show, good friend of the show, to talk about his Kickstarter going right now for his issue number 4 of his comic Prometheus, and one of the 3 very magnetic hosts from the podcast known as What If, we welcome Mr. Ryan Little. Ryan, thank you so much for being here.
Love that show.
Guys, I'm so glad our people could work out, you know, the contracts to free me up to come over here and do a little operation for you guys. This is great. It's always happened. And this is one for my other thumb, I think. I think this is number 6 on Canned Air.
Wow.
It
might be. Oh, at least.
I said one for the thumb before, so now I'm going one for the other thumb. So that's why I'm feeling good about 6.
I'm about to pull this up and look really quick. We had Brian E. Lau on last week, and that was his 7th appearance. I just titled the episode 7.
So that's what it's going to be, huh? All right, that's fine.
So you got competition.
You got to step it up, Ryan.
It's actually not a huge deal, Ryan. I just want to make sure you know that. Oh, fine.
We knew you'd have an issue with it. That's why we had him on last week.
Yeah, that's right. He's cooking the books, man.
Ryan's coming on.
You've been on 4 Canned Air episodes, it looks like.
On the what if the Christmas one, when that was still, was that still Canned Air thing at that point?
It was. That was 217, number 217 of Canned Air. What if Santa really existed? Where, if I remember correctly, we tried to talk about that as long as we could, but we just let the conversation collapse so we could go straight to trashing The Last Jedi.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so this is number 5. I think that's a free sub for
this
Ryan.
This is the 5-timers club. All right.
I need that's to great. Quit using that joke. I use it every time.
All of a sudden, it's going to start. Where's my sub at?
We were promised sandwiches. But today on the show, I'm not even sure what the reason was exactly. It was Randy's idea, but he wasn't able to join us tonight. We're going to be talking all things medieval in this week's Retro Roundtable. So medieval settings or characters from movies, video games, television, you name it, comics, whatever it may be. Then after that, we're going to turn our attention over to Ryan and talk more about his Kickstarter for issue number 4 of Prometheus. But before we do all of that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing here and you want to support the show, don't forget to head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod, where for a few dollars a month, you can get access to, a couple cool different things there. For $1 a month, you can get access to the Canned Air Fantasy Fight, which is like an hour long album we did.
The tournament for
fictional
random characters.
That we were picked by a roll of a dice.
Yep.
And boy, was that fun. We decked it out with sound effects. You hear the audience roar, the announcer in the ring, all that stuff. It's pretty cool. And then at $5 a month, you get access to the monthly released Canned Air Patreon pod. It's just a little bit different of a show than this one.
Mm-hmm.
We just kind of let it.
It's more behind the scenes rambling.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that's a good way of putting it. Well done, Jack.
Yeah. Something will catch out just out of conversation, and then that'll just spawn into great conversation.
Yeah.
From there.
Yeah, yeah. Last week or last month was fun. We just Randy had old commercials from like commercial reels from the 90s, and we would just look at a commercial and then riff on it.
That just fed
watch
a bunch
another
of,
commercial.
Yeah.
That was some fun conversation, so I look forward to doing that again. But some of the stuff you can get there. And if you're heading to a Wizard World Con, we have Columbus coming up right here, our hometown. What is that, October
18th, 19th, and 20th, I believe it is.
Something like that. Yeah, like the third weekend in October. Yeah. So if you plan on going, buy your tickets online and use the promo code CANDAIR at checkout. You get 10% off your purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Can't beat that. Cons are expensive.
Yeah.
Cons are freaking expensive. Take our generous offering.
You can use that savings to buy Subway at the convention.
Yeah. We're still waiting to see if it'll do shit for us, even. Yep. But here's hoping. Here's hoping. What am I forgetting, Jack? Anything?
I believe that's it.
One quick thing I do need to mention before we move on is just today, Sid Haig, who is better known as Captain Spaulding from House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, passed away. That was really, I wasn't the biggest of fans of those films, but I was definitely aware of who he was. He was definitely a cultural icon.
I know him from the makeup. Otherwise, I had no idea who it was because I haven't seen those movies. Oh, shame on me.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy as hell. Ryan, have you seen any of those films?
Yeah, House of a Thousand Corpses, a dig. I'm glad he's in the great inevitable ether now, where he belongs with all the other creepy monsters.
And if I remember correctly, there's a new film coming out that featured the three of those three same characters from The Devil's Rejects. Am I mistaken
about
that?
That it's out now, but I'm not sure if it's
like The Devil's Own or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
We're getting into good horror movie time. October's knocking.
Maybe that's what. Maybe it's on its way out because it's not even October yet, so it should be out soon.
I'm waiting for that Joker movie. Day by day, it looks better and better, doesn't it? Stoked. But I think that's going to do it. So let's just kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
And away we go.
I'll be back. Shut up!
All right, guys.
Shut up!
The medieval... Shut up. Realm, the medieval and pop culture. Where do we start?
How about one thing that really drives me batty about medieval movies that I cannot stand that they do is they try to put current stuff in it, like A Knight's Tale. It was a goodish movie, but they had them playing We Will Rock You, and they had a bunch of music, like rock music in it.
Yeah, it kind of pulls you out, doesn't it?
Big time pulls you out, yep.
Yeah, it's not immersive like Lord of the Rings or something.
Right, yeah. Something that brings you into today's pop culture. I don't know. I hate it when they do that.
Yeah. And I blame Guardians of the Galaxy. That soundtrack for that first Guardians movie just took off in such a big way. So now needle drops, as they call them, are just... then you saw it swing the other way, like in Suicide Squad, where there's needle drop like every minute and a half. It's like, remember how much you like Ballroom Blitz? Remember how much you like Call Me? Remember how much you like Blondie? Like, just slapping you in the face over and over again. And fantasy especially, I can't really think of a time I've seen it used particularly well at all.
No. Lord of the Rings, The Battle of Helm's Deep. Didn't they do Rock Me Like a Hurricane?
God.
But see, they got Enya for that. But they had Enya sing like elfin mystical nonsense. I'm not sure what it was.
See, that I can totally see and get down with them doing something that way. Something that actually fits the genre. Not.
I know what you mean. I've never seen Knight's Tale, but I could tell that from a distance about the film. Like
you've never seen Knight's Tale?
No, I have not.
You never accidentally turned on TBS at like 2 in the afternoon on a Saturday? Because that movie lives on there.
Yeah, I accidentally turned it on to it, but then I on purposely changed it. Should I watch it? Is it good?
It's all right. If it wasn't for the music, I think it would have probably been better. Huh. Paul Bettany's in it.
Who?
Paul Bettany.
Who's that?
The Vision.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And the Joker.
Heath Ledger. Yeah, and who's the... Is Jude Law the bad guy?
Jude Law's always a bad guy.
So true. Now, it's like, it's funny because it's like pop medieval stuff, you know, like it's a medieval movie that's like, you're here for the swords and the horses and stuff. We're not going to pretend to be like historically accurate or any of that crap like that. You just like any excuse to have a jousting tournament and like a person triumphantly carry a sword. That's all you're here for. So let's just be honest and not getting all the minutiae of it all. But if we're going to talk about medieval movies, I would say the nice thing about talking about Knight's Tale first is it puts the bar nice and low for us.
Good starting ground.
Like if anybody's like looking for a medieval movie podcast, like, well, let's see what Candair is. Well, this week we're talking Knight's Tale. Okay.
These guys have no idea. After that,
next. Oh, man. All right, Ryan, what do you got?
Well, you know, I think if you're going to talk, there's obviously the Lord of the Rings trilogy that you have to talk about, but I really think you can't talk medieval stuff anymore without starting with Game of Thrones. Like at this point, there is medieval stuff before Game of Thrones and there's medieval stuff after Game of Thrones. Because at this point, are we going to get any medieval stuff for at least 10 years that doesn't have what, three dueling houses in it, some secret army somewhere? Like Game of Thrones just created like, what, six new cliches that we're going to see ripped off? I'm going to say for about 10 years till we're all sick of it.
Would Game of Thrones rule as medieval or fantasy?
Oh, good question.
It's a fine line, though. Yeah. I mean, whenever, like, we've gone to Renaissance festivals, you definitely see people dressed from, like, Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings
see that,
and stuff.
Yeah, because it just
fits. With pointed ears and whatnot. Like, tons of people wearing, like, elf ear prosthetics and stuff. Mm. So I'd say it definitely qualifies. Okay. Yeah.
If you really want me to push my glasses up here, I would say it starts as medieval, and then as it weaves in the White Walker part, it turns. Because when it starts, there's no dragons, and there's no – all the monsters are dead and everything. It's all just palace intrigue and who will sit on the Iron Throne. And then slowly it becomes about the Long Night and the war with the White Walkers.
You know, it's funny. Thinking about it now, I remember seeing several people also dressed as Jedis and like Padawans and stuff at medieval festivals. Multiple people, jeez, several different occasions.
the scathing loathing coming.
I know you're getting sick over there, like just rubbing his chin, getting disgusted with every word that comes out of my mouth. But no, I was going to say, you know, Star Wars would kind of fit into this category because, I mean, all Star Wars is medieval drama in space.
Pretty much, yeah.
And, you know, just now I didn't even think about that. But yeah, for sure. You definitely see people dressed from Star Wars at medieval festivals.
Knights and space wizards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Truly.
Really is.
I mean, hell, one of the most recent iterations of the Round Table was in Transformers 4. When they had Stanley Tucci play Merlin.
I didn't watch it.
As soon as I heard they were kind of using the, what was it, King Arthur?
Yep.
Yeah, like I was just like, I don't know. Yeah,
well, the fact that Stanley Tucci was in the one before that, too, which kind of threw me off.
They don't give a fuck about continuity.
He could play every character for all I care.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, they go full on Knights of the Round Table and you know all the things, and then he's Merlin. And but I guess that's the question. So are we calling medievals anything without sort of high concept mystical elements in it? We're talking just like Kevin Costner, Robin Hood, and stuff like that.
Loose convo. You can talk whatever you want, man. It's all good.
There we go.
Because I just end up getting too dry, like a really dry medieval movie.
Hang on, Ryan. Wrong conversation.
But truly, like it's like. Well, then we're just talking Mary Queen of Scots and Prestige. Like it's so because at this point, you know, again, I think that's another way Game of Thrones has messed it all up. That like just like how long is it going to be until we see just dudes with swords anymore? You know, I think there's always going to have to be that little even, you know, they did that King Arthur movie a few years ago with the guy from Sons of Anarchy that a lot
just
of people
came and went. No one ever heard nothing else.
So
about it.
Here's my thing about this movie. I went and saw this movie. I kept wanting to share on Twitter and across different platforms screen grabs because that movie was like a secret World of Warcraft movie and everybody missed it. But so few people saw that movie that to this day, I still can't really find pictures online of some of the characters. The final villain, his final form, spoiler alert for anyone that wants to see that King Arthur movie, here's your chance to turn it off. He like pulls on a flaming skull mask that makes him like 8 feet tall. He gets a cape made of fire and his signature weapon is a double-sided scythe. Like, That's the most nerdy, out of control genre crap I've seen like in my entire life. And then Jax Teller, King Arthur, can shoot lasers out of his, out of Excalibur. It gets crazy. What? Yeah, it goes
it's like
way
some
off
shit the- out of Heavy Metal magazine or something.
Yeah, I thought it was supposed to be like an authentic period piece almost. Of the
Dude, they mythos. Buried all that shit. They screened that movie for the executive. They're like, oh, God, we cannot tell people we made a nerd movie. We got to hide all of it. One of the coolest parts of it is Arthur's dad has Excalibur, and there's like a coup, and he's overthrown. And this is the opening scene of the movie, so I'm not ruining anything. So because he knows he's going to be overthrown, he throws his sword in the air and he kneels and it stabs him through the neck and turns him into the stone. And it's like, if you fail as a keeper of Excalibur, you must become the stone for the next person who will draw the blade.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's real awesome. And the person that watches him do it is this crazy Gorgon River monster thing. It's outrageous. Forget Knight's Tale. Go rent this King Arthur movie.
So after it stabs him through and after he dies, then he turns to stone.
He stays upright. Like it basically slides into his body while he's kneeling upright, and the impaling turns him into a stone.
Wow.
Hmm. Yeah, it's
that's
pretty
interesting.
So when you pull the sword out, does he like, ow, that kind of hurt?
Oh, finally.
Yeah.
Now he's just a rock now. I don't know, maybe that's for the sequel. Also, don't forget this was directed by Guy Ritchie. So there's that too.
I'm sorry, I don't know what Guy Ritchie else. What else he's done?
Big action director, probably biggest one was Ocean's 11. He popularized kind of all those quick cross cuts in a montage sequence.
I see. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's him.
I enjoyed Ocean's 11 and 13, 12.
I am not saying this movie is like those movies. They just have a person in common. Ryan, I rented King Arthur, and it did not remind me of Ocean's 11, 12, or 13.
Nothing like it. Didn't see Clooney anywhere.
Oh no, I'd be in on the King Arthur film just for the impaling.
Yeah. I'm kind of sold on it.
I gotta see that.
And that's the first 10 minutes. So after that, once it gets to like the interpersonal romance and drama stuff, you can just turn it off. But you'll see the cool sword thing, and it's Eric Bana who plays his dad.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The second
everything's
original
turning up Jeremy, it sounds like.
Yeah, just pandering to Jeremy night here on Canned Air.
All right, you guys, what about, have either of you ever been to a medieval times restaurant?
No, and I want to go so bad, I think.
You think?
Man. I think I want to go.
What's
I don't
there to
know
think about?
Anyone that's ever gone to really see
yes,
if
you do.
It was, have
what,
you been
what
to
are
one?
You going to get at one of those restaurants that, like, you're not, you've never been one. I can tell you right now, you know exactly what's going to happen when you get there, but it's going to be awesome.
Fuck yeah. It's totally awesome.
I didn't know if it was actually going to be like hyped up to what it actually is, or it's just kind
of
like,
you gotta, I mean, of course you've got to lend yourself to it. If you go in there being like, let's see this impress me. Yeah, you're probably going to poo-poo the whole thing off. But, you know, go in there, give yourself to it, and just have fun. It's a great time. I mean, you know, you're served like the great big like turkey legs and shit on like
No utensils,
these metal plates and bowls that I guess are notorious for stealing them as like a souvenir.
You have one.
Oh, I totally missed that
part. I don't have one. No, I don't. But I have done that before, just not at a medieval time. But no, so, you know, you're in a big arena. That's where you eat.
Right.
You don't so much have tables where you're just like in these line. I mean, I guess they're tables, but like more of like a bar that everyone's seated up against looking down into the arena to where there are knights dueling. And depending where you're sitting depends which knight you're representing. There's two different colored knights, or maybe they do four different colored knights. I can't remember. It's been over 20 years since I've been.
Oh, I went to one like 18 months ago.
Oh, well, bet maybe you should be leading this instead of me.
Ours, I think, was like six knights. So there's multiple rounds of tournament. Where we'll see, you'll see jousting. There's three events. There's jousting. There's some other kind of swordplay thing, and then so it narrows down each time. Two guys get eliminated, and then when finally there's two fight, and then the winner becomes like lord of the tournament and gets blessed by the king. Usually there's like a sub narrative to it that some bad guy will show up at some point, and then the final hero, whoever is the chosen champion, will have to defeat him. But, you know, to really pat myself on the back here and create a real thesis, I'm telling you, post Game of Thrones, it's cool to like this stuff now. So there are so, like, I went, it was a sold out crowd. And it was just like a random Saturday here in Los Angeles. And people are so into it. You know, there's like an hour, like, pregame ceremony thing. So, you know, 15 minutes into this thing, there's 100 drunk people screaming for the King of the North and all this crap, but everybody really buys in this hilarious way. And it's just awesome. It's really just, you just got to let yourself, let the river take you, man. Jack, you got to go to one. You're going to get the chicken leg, pay $5. You have a little banner to wave for your night, and you're going to feel the magic.
See, ever since the cable guy, that's why I've always wanted to do that, because they went to that one.
Yeah, there's one in, you have one over here, near you? What? There's not one here.
Yeah, I thought there was.
Where?
Shut up. It's like on Trock Road or something like that.
Up. If there is a Medieval Times in Columbus, we are going.
I have to look.
I think you're wrong. We'll look at it. I'm looking now. Fuck it.
You got it. I want to know about the Columbus fantasy art scene.
I can't imagine there's one in Columbus.
Can you imagine that board meeting? Fellas, I'm telling you, Columbus is a gold mine.
Right. Like, what the fuck?
Jack, I'll sign you up for the birthday club right now. I'm on their website.
Oh,
if you're going to go.
Maybe it wasn't called that, but it was something like that.
I would believe there's an off-brand Medieval Times in Columbus.
Same here. Are you sure you just didn't see, like, the Renaissance Festival?
No, it was a play. I want to say... Is that it?
Oh, now, guys, I've never been to Columbus, Ohio, but I'm doing a quick Google search here, and it's saying, if you want to go to Medieval Times, you would love the Buckeye Express Diner. Eat dinner in this old, like, refurbished train car.
Sounds
what
about
the hell,
right.
Columbus? That's not even close.
I'm having trouble here. I don't see one. Do you?
Yeah, I don't see one. I have to see if I can remember where it was. It wasn't exactly Medieval Times. It was something, but it was, I think, along the same lines.
Because they typically, just like we were talking, they like pop up around like the Great Wolf Lodge. They around other tourist attractions,
right?
So, you know, around Disney or, you know, out in California. I'm sure there's a shit ton of them.
I want to say it's over by Z&Z Boots over off of, I think it's 161 or something like that.
That would be so on my radar if there was a Medieval Times here. There is no way.
Otherwise, we just got laser tag out here.
We got shit. That's not true. We love you, Columbus. But we want a Medieval Times. So, yeah, that's something I just wanted to mention, because that's one thing that pops straight to the front of my mind anytime I think anything medieval was going to that. I totally forget the show for the most part, but it was definitely experience for sure.
That's cool, yeah, because I was always like, I don't know if it would really... You know, I never knew anyone, so now that I do know someone that experienced it, enjoyed it, then...
Well, Ryan, did you say there's one out near you?
Oh, yeah, there's one out... It's amazing. There's one out here, like, 10 minutes from Disneyland, and it's across the street from, like, a Pirates dinner thing.
So there's
a real rivalry between the Knights and the Pirates, which, personally, if they wanted to make the real money, once a year they would do a WrestleMania and have Pirates versus Knights. And that would be must-see theater for me, but I guess we haven't gotten there yet. We don't live in a perfect world.
Well, hey, we're supposed to come out and see you. Maybe that's something we could do for dinner one night.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, guys, we're going to live stream. We're going to Twitch that thing for
sure. Oh, my God, that would be so funny.
Jack goes to Medieval Times.
Heck yeah.
The Virgin Voyage. Very good. All right. Jack, we're back to you.
The last Robin Hood that came out.
You're talking with
Eggsy?
I thought that like was horrid.
It was horrid.
Bomb. Did you see it?
No, I didn't want to go see it, but it didn't look good of it, because it was so, everyone was so pretty and clean and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Jamie Foxx was in, not that was anything
that was
against
a,
it, but
that was the thing about Kevin Costner's Robin Hood. I mean, it's a good film, but like everybody's just too, like you said, too clean. Like there's no way these fucking wood dwelling people are this clean cut and everything. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's all Pantene commercials over and over again.
Like, who's feathering their hair out in those woods? Really?
Give me a nice cut with layers.
I want to look good when we take down the king.
I honestly always think of, like, the poor people in the mud in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I wanted to bring
that
one up, actually,
right.
Too. Just sitting there harvesting filth.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Monty Python the Holy Grail?
I don't get it, man. I don't fucking get it.
I had a friend. I loved the movie, and I had him sit and watch it, and he fell asleep in it because he just wasn't getting it either.
British humor with me is either like all the way or not at all. There's no middle ground. It's like it can be so fucking dry sometimes.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just think it gets, it's kind of like the, I don't know. I hope I don't offend anyone saying this, but I just, you know how anything else, like the Nightmare Before Christmas, for example, you know, it gets a cult following, but it hits a level to where people are into it without even being into it. They're just into it because the masses are into it. Mm-hmm. They know they should. It's considered one of the greats. I haven't seen it, but, you know, I know what it is. Yeah, I know what it is. You know, I don't fucking get it. Like,
you haven't seen Nightmare on Christmas?
No, I've seen that
one. Oh, okay.
I've seen that one. I'm just saying I don't get it with the Holy Grail. Because, I mean, I have seen, like, clips and stuff. And, yeah, it's like, quick chuckle and shit. But, like, I don't get the cult following behind it.
Yeah, I would say if you don't get it, it's never going to move the needle. But I think one of the best compliments you can give British comedy is, like, I'm all in or nothing at all. Which I would say is like the exact, that's like the perfect kind of description of it. Either it's going to rock your world or you're going to have no idea what anybody's talking about.
Yeah.
But it's a good riff on, because, you know, we're at this like such a funny in between time for medieval stuff, I feel like, right now. Because even, you know, I'm really going to kind of step on the Bible here for a minute. Those original trilogy Lord of the Rings movies, I love them. I love them endlessly. When I was stuck in a hospital for 9 hours waiting for surgery this year, I watched all three of them in a row. That's like what I went to for my comfort movie. But they're time is slowly starting to take those movies too. We're about, you know, you watch it and like Aragorn wears these like fuzzy like felt poncho things with like leggings and like these very trendy like lady boots, and like Orlando Bloom is speaking in like half Shakespeare talk the whole time in like a really weird way. I mean, the score is triumphant and the fight scenes are amazing, and Helm's Deep still looks better than most big box office cinema from the last 10 years. But there's just little things now where I'm just like, this is like, nothing's really happening right now. So I can feel we're at this like Genesis moment. I don't know what the cool new thing's coming, but it's coming, guys. I can feel it.
Definitely. I saw something on social media the other day that said every 10 years we look back to 10 years ago and see, you know, wow, I can't believe that's where we were in that short a time. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they're just saying what, like, kind of what Ryan's saying, what's going to be coming so very soon in the next 10 years, it's going to just blow our minds and make what's happening now just look like, well, we don't need that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look at just in 10 years of Marvel. Look what from Iron Man 1, where the big fight scene was, haha, your robot froze, to Endgame, which is like all the hordes of the multiverse descend through the portals or whatever, like exponential growth.
Yeah, 20 years ago, if you would have found me and been like, hey, Marvel's going to dominate cinema, I would probably laugh in your face.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, you just got back from seeing Batman and Robin. You're like, oh, that movie? Okay,
yeah. Sure. Yeah. Man, I don't know. Was that Ryan's pick, or was that you? Or?
I went, and then Ryan intervened, and then so I'd probably jump back to you.
Okay. See. How about Assassin's Creed? I mean, that kind of fits, right?
Man, I have so many questions about that franchise. Holy crap. Assassin's Creed is fascinating.
In a good or bad way?
You know, I'm going to say both, because that, you know, Assassin's Creed is such a good example of that aesthetic is just so damn compelling. Like, that guy looks so cool that it like kind of instantly birthed like a modern staple in video games. But man, I will never forget for the rest of my life, me and my little brother, you know, I drove him to midnight releases when they actually had him at midnight. You know, bought our copy of Assassin's Creed, came home. Oh, man, cool white cloak warrior, knives out of his wrist. This is going to pop it in. This would be great. And it's like, it opens in like downtown New York City. And we're like, wait,
what? Threw me off too, the same way.
What the hell? It was in none of the advertising material, like at no point. And I like to this day, so part of me says, because I saw the movie too. I sat through that thing, which was a journey.
Was that also Eggsy?
No, that was Fassbender.
Oh, yes. Okay, I'm sorry.
Continue. And Jerrion Irons and Marion Cotillard. That movie should have been insane. But, man, it was... In the perfect world, you know, in the multiverse, somewhere there's an Earth that got the Assassin's Creed that is, like, half The Matrix, half Gladiator, and it's perfect and incredible. But, boy, it is not the world that we live in.
Yeah, you know, those games, though, they are appealing on a surface level, like you were saying, you know, the knives in the hands, jumping from roof to roof, doing stealthy attacks.
Landing in bales of hay.
That stuff is all fun, for sure. But, You know, I don't remember which one of the games was my first, but after that one, I was like, okay, I got to get the next one. This was a ball. And then you get the next one, you're like, all right, this is pretty much just the other one with a few added things. And then
we're back.
The next one, and it's, okay, it's the same game again. Just they gave me this time. You know, it starts to kind of become like a Call of Duty. You know, I had to really duck out of those games because they were coming out so fast and the differences were minute. And they, you know, I didn't care. Didn't care anymore.
This one, we put pirate ships in it, which is supposed to be one of the best ones, just because of the whole sailing.
The Black Flag.
Yeah,
I have two. Mind you, two brand new unopened Assassin's Creed games that I've had for like 2 years. That's one of them.
Oh yeah, you got the multiplayer one too, I'm sure, that came with your Xbox, I think.
Yes. Actually, one of them is the downloadable content. I do have one of them though, like a hard disk, and I still just have no urge to even put it in, like, because I know what it's going to be. Like,
same here.
You know, I know exactly what I've done it. I've been there.
Xbox is giving away Black Flag for free this month. All right. If I want to,
it's better than nothing. Because the fact that some consoles come without games is just straight bullshit in itself. They should all come with a game. Come on.
So true.
Give me a break. But
at least a demo disc, if anybody remembers demo discs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I still have some old PlayStation demo discs somewhere.
Nice.
One thing though that they did that brought me back in, that made me go buy the game again, was when they added that multiplayer mode where one of you is the assassin and the other can like blend into the crowds and you have to like act natural and shit to be
just kind of walk with the bots to not look conspicuous. Yeah,
that was fun.
That was
a lot of fun. But again, as fun as it is, it immediately starts to deteriorate in replay.
You can only do it so many times.
It gets old pretty quick. So they did that in one of the Batman games too. One of the last Batman games where Robin was in there, where you and a friend could play Batman and Robin. And then
we played that. Yeah.
Did you and I play that?
Yeah, it was on the Origins one, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was the fat villain running around.
That's right. You alternate between the villains and playing Batman.
That's right. Yeah.
Man.
Because you were cracking up. You're like, are you the fat guy? Because I was just sitting there running around.
Well, it's fun. It was so cool because when you're Batman or Robin, you're given the same kind of things you have in game. But then when you switch to the perspective of the bad guy, all you have is your gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're just walking into darkness and you're like, oh, shit. Like, at any moment, this dude is coming out of anywhere. Like, there's no way to prepare yourself. You just lend yourself to it. But anyway, Jack.
Skyrim, even though I've never played it, I still want to play it.
That's like the Elder Scroll games. Yeah.
It's like the greatest one ever, I guess.
I bought it once because that was like a $20... Like one of the $20 classic games eventually, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so.
I bought it and I got rid of it pretty quick. It just wasn't for me. You might like it because you're into like the exploring massive lands and gathering shit. And
I even got it for VR when it came out and I still...
You did buy it. Okay.
Yeah, I think... Did I buy it twice? I think I bought it twice. And I still... Actually, I bought it 3 times because I've got...
And you couldn't get into it.
No, I played... The one before that, Oblivion, and the wife sat there with the book next to me, and she kind of read through and coached me on where to go and stuff like that, and we ended up beating it that way. This one,
If you don't have that guide, you're just lost with your thumb up your ass, and that was my problem. The game started, and I was like, okay, this looks cool. I can go anywhere I want, and just after a while, you're like, what the fuck? Point me in a direction, please. Like, where am I going? What's happening here?
And there's a weird thing with those where because you can choose your own adventure, I think instead of making one strong campaign with like 5 cool supporting characters, they take all that energy and distribute it across like 40 just like random townspeople. It's like, I'm Butcher James and I can't find my son, Tim. It's like, guess I'll go find Tim now, but I don't feel strongly about Butcher James, and like I don't recognize his town, so I'll never be able to find it again.
Exactly. Like, why should you give a shit about his son?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only cool part I thought was absorbing the dragon power and learning the magic words. But
yeah, I think the first one. That was it. I don't.
But now we're going fantasy again. See, that's why I need a little zhuzh on top, or else I'm kind of sleeping. Well, while we're there,
we should touch on Fable too.
Oh yeah, Fable.
Yeah,
those were good games. I guess I only played... I played the second one, but that one didn't win me over like the first
chickens
one.
Chickens and fart on the townspeople. We talked about that before.
That you really... That seemed to be the lasting impression on you was the chickens and the farts. But no, that first one was an amazing game. I loved it. And I don't even typically get into that kind of a genre of a game. But I played that one from front to back. I enjoyed the shit out of it. It was good.
I think I have two. I tried playing...
I don't think it was bad, but it just wasn't the first one.
Hmm. It was about an hour or two into it, and I didn't really accomplish much of anything, and I was like, I don't know if I can play in this thing.
I just remember, like, discovering how I could be evil, and it was like, I found this old building out in the woods that if you lured people to and sacrificed them, your evil count would go up. So I was constantly luring townspeople out to this fucking building to sacrifice them, and I eventually turned gray and had horns. And, oh, I was evil.
Man, is that worth it?
Right? Totally worth it. All right, guys, what else we got? Anything?
I got a crazy tangent. Or I shouldn't say tangent. This is a weird addition, I think, if we're coming off video games. Now, this I'm going to give this all the prefaces in the world. I'm not saying you should go watch this whole movie. I am not saying this movie is for everyone. I'm not saying that if you liked or even kind of like all the things we've mentioned so far, that you're going to like this movie. However, in 2015, Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard, who you will know for the worst death scene ever in The Dark Knight Dark Knight Rises as Talia al Ghul,
were in... Yes! Holy crap! I can't believe you just said that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just watched scene on YouTube 2 days ago and thought to myself, holy shit, that is bad.
Like, she literally goes, bleh, and dies. there's like a weird little like dry throw up thing she does that's outrageous. Yeah. I defend that movie and I like that movie, but man,
it's shocking they went with that.
I'm not gonna die on that, and that's the best take. Remember that.
Imagine every other one.
A movie like that, they probably shoot that scene at least 18 times.
So. They should have done it like in South Park, like when they're getting killed by the global warming. Like,
that would have been better, I think.
I would have loved that so much more than what they gave us.
I guarantee a scene like that, he's like, can you go a little bigger for me? No, sorry, bigger. Okay, so this is all you're doing today. You're doing the same thing. Yeah, you don't want to be in this movie. Like, I get it. This is a dumb death that you die because you're such a bad driver. I understand. The daughter of the demon's head killed by an 18-wheeler. But, you know, it's the world we live in. At least it's not Suicide Squad.
True that.
But, so her and Michael Fassbender, who played whatever cool knife wrist guy from Assassin's Creed and more famously Magneto in the new X-Men franchise, they were in a version of Macbeth that came out. The opening of that movie is one of the best depictions of like a medieval fight scene I've ever seen.
Really?
Because it really shows you, it's this scene of like, the weapons are not, like, it's like everything we're saying. They're not these gorgeous like underwear models with perfectly, you know, lavished hair or whatever. It is like a bunch of schlubs with these wrought iron, crudely sharpened swords with like, you know, leather wrapped around it so they don't cut their hands while they hold it. They meet in some field and it's like, you know, 100 against 125 and it's who will win the day. And you really, like, for me, it really landed me in like, damn, like, this is how history was really made. A bunch of poor people got pointy things, went into a field, and went to see who could murder more people first. It's brutal. It's super well shot. I think if you want to really do your due diligence, you watch the first 5 minutes of that movie and the last 5 minutes, and it's awesome cinema.
I would like to see that. That sounds interesting as hell.
That's what I liked about Braveheart, I think, with the fighting, too, just because a bunch of dirty Scotsmen run around in dresses. Homemade weapons and axes and stuff like that.
Right.
It puts more into it to what they actually had, how they actually fought and stuff.
I blame the prequels a little bit that, like, now we're in this world where everybody wants, like, anything with a sword is fencing now. You know what I mean? It's super fast. If there aren't two spins and, like, a triple axle, you're not doing it right.
Exactly, yes.
But it can still be intense, you know, if you do it right. Which is funny. Never mind. We're not going to go down the Star Wars rabbit hole. But anyway, if you want a good fight scene, man, it's a humdinger.
Have either of you guys ever been interested in LARPing at all?
Oh, Jeremy. Oh, Jeremy, now we're going to be real good friends.
Oh, that's it. I wasn't sure where that one was going. I was like, uh-oh.
I have personally completed a 3-hour Lord of the Rings themed LARP before.
Wow, are you serious?
Yeah, it's wild. You got to be, you know, it's the same muscle you use when you go to a Medieval Times dinner where you got to really like be able to buy in. I've been a D&D player for like 10 years though, so I'm, you know, actually probably 15 years at this point. But so I know how to like really commit to that kind of stuff. Also, I'm just a nerd. But yeah, I did a Lord of the Rings one at my summer camp with about 60 people that the fellowship had to get the ring from the dark end of the woods over to the lake. We had ring race and orcs and arrows and the whole shebang.
And was it literally a ring, or was it like, okay, this flag represents the ring?
You know, he had a ring, and he had to get it. We had like a T-dock, like your classic, you know, long dock that went out in the lake, and he had to get, that was Mount Doom. So he had to get to the dock, and then Gollum was waiting in the water at the end of the dock. So he had to get to the end of the dock and then drop the ring in, and then that's how they won.
Wow. That would be intense.
I think it would be fun, but like, movies and stereotypes are what make me afraid to do it. Except for the movie with Paul Rudd and
Role Models.
Role Models. That actually made it look like it was going to be fun.
Plastic.
I always and maybe this is what you're saying, is I guess I've always had an interest in it, but I've kept from doing it because of certain types of people it might attract. You know, sure. I imagine like the... you remember playing dodgeball in elementary school. There was always just one big fucking behemoth that just always laid waste to the class. And yeah. I imagine that is where that guy ended up, was on a LARPing field, just taking pool noodles and beating the fuck out of people with them. And I don't want to be that kid, you know?
Yeah, that's a fair read for sure. You know, I was at an Iron Maiden concert last weekend, and it was that all over the place. Like, half the people were just so freaking amped up and like, yeah, ready to smash something. And I'm like, we are in a 15,000 person theater. Like, I don't know what you think you're attending.
How was the show? I saw Iron Maiden years ago. It's been a long time.
Man, it was wild. Yeah, I mean, bands like that, like, I mean, they know what their thing is. You know, they know what they want to do. You know what you want from them, and they just deliver. I had an absolute blast.
Fan service turned up to 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, they shot fireworks at each other. The giant zombie thing came out. They had a full little Piper fighter jet came out when they opened with Aces High. It was, I feel like I did it. I have seen all that Iron Maiden has to show me.
They put on one incredible show. I would say it's probably on par with what Kiss probably puts on as far as just pyrotechnics.
Theatrics and stuff.
You know, they got the Eddie walking around on the stage, great big. I remember seeing that years ago, and it sounds like they're still doing that based on what you're saying.
Oh, it's their thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, but having a huge, like, puppet, like, big, big
puppet.
Yeah,
there's a guy on stilts. He was probably 12, 15 feet tall. But still, like, that's, having him on stage is the same as playing Run to the Hills. Like, he is one of their hits at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did the whole shebang. But yes, the LARPs can get intense. But it's just like D&D. I've played great games of D&D, and I've played just, it's like watching paint dry because it's the wrong mix of people. But you're also talking, you know, I'm a self-publishing comic writer who also, you know, plays Division I rugby. So I like the like moving around of it all. But yeah, you get the whole, you know, if you see a guy that's got like a ponytail that goes past his waist, he's going to be swinging his sword too hard.
That is a safe bet. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to shoot
stay away from that guy.
Shirtless and his hair down to his ass. He's
totally ripped.
He wants to tell you that he knows quite a bit of German. He might be bilingual.
Oh, stay away from that dude. We'll just call him Ted Danger.
Oh, he wishes.
Oh, Jesus. All right. That's a good note, I think, to end the retro roundtable on right there. But good combo. I'm sitting here thinking, looking at the notes, that I don't think we wrapped up at the beginning of the episode mentioning Sid Haig's death, did we? I mentioned it. We said, oh, do you remember him? And then we just kind of glazed back over it.
Yeah, but, I think so.
I better touch back on that right now. He did pass away today. I'm not sure what it was exactly, but again, he was Captain Spaulding from the House of 1,000 Corpses and the Devil's Rejects, and I think what's going to be called the Devil's Zone. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
But definitely a cultural icon. And I felt horrible last week because there were two other deaths I wanted to mention. One, Eddie Money. I don't know if either of you guys... I remember you know Eddie Money.
Yeah, I know. That blew me away when you told me about it, because I had no idea until today when we were prepping for the show that he had passed away.
Yeah, yeah. And Rick Ocasek from The Cars, lead mm-hmm. singer of The Cars. That one, too, was crazy to hear. I mean, these gentlemen were, you know, 75 in their 70s to 80s.
Yeah.
Which, but still, it sucks. They've given us so much.
Take me home tonight.
Yeah, we're going to have to go out on an Eddie Money or Cars song, but I feel bad having to choose one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
We can do a mashup of them.
Yeah, that's the one. We'll see. I mean, just what I needed. It's just as iconic.
Yeah.
Can you open with one and close with the other?
I could, but then it wouldn't make any sense to anybody until this point of the episode. 40 minutes in, like, what the fuck was that about?
You're just really into the Cars.
I could start it moving in stereo.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Just playing both at the same time.
It's going to be a long-ass intro, but whatever. They'll roll with it. They'll get it at 40 minutes and or 44 and 28 in. All right.
Hope they make it this far.
We'll see. All right, Ryan, let's turn our attention over to you. Talk about this Kickstarter that has just, man, been crazy successful. Huge congrats to you, but this is for issue 4 of Prometheus. With 16 days to go and funded, man, that's, again, congratulations
to you. Yeah, thanks, man. So, we took over a year on this issue because we had a couple different delays, and I don't launch until the book's done. But we had a ton of fans come back, which is really awesome. People came back really quickly. And because people are such big fans, I start now, my Kickstarter is only 24 days long instead of 30 to try to get people the books faster. So people really rallied in. It's been a week tomorrow since we launched. And we're over 100 Jeez. Strong at this point. So it's pretty, it really means a lot.
You have a following.
Mm, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, we do. Chris Shahan, our interior artist, is, I mean, rising star doesn't quite cover it. That guy will be drawing your favorite Batman comic within the next 5 years. I can guarantee it. So he does a lot of the legwork, too.
I cannot wait to see it, man. I think we saw the first two issues, I think we've seen.
First two, yeah. And then I think we threw a blurb out during 3.
Yeah, I think we did.
Yeah.
I got to restock you guys then. Yeah, we got 3's awesome and 4's. So 4's our penultimate issue, too, at least for the first volume. So we just got to set the track, and then the ending's just one long ride.
So for people who are new to the idea of Prometheus in this episode, can you just give them a brief overview of what Prometheus is?
Totally. So Prometheus is sort of retelling and a sequel of the legend of Prometheus, who was the titan in Greek mythology who stole the flame of knowledge from the god and gave it to mortal man. That's what sort of turned us from crude Neanderthals into, able to make civilization and all the things we have now. And in the Greek mythology, Prometheus was imprisoned by the gods for giving humankind knowledge, and that's where he stayed for all of eternity. In the comic, Prometheus escapes this imprisonment in the modern day, and really kind of seeing himself as a martyr, he can't wait to see what humanity has done with this gift of knowledge, and he finds our real world is pop culture, Kardashians, reality TV, all that crap, and he realizes, oh my god, someone has stolen the flame of knowledge. So it's sort of a God of War by way of John Wick revenge thriller, where he goes through the remnants of Olympus to find what's happened to the flame of knowledge and beat the shit out of all the gods who get in his way.
We call that a good selling
I like
point.
That description of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Keanu Reeves.
So are you able to then divulge any information as to what issue 4 or what has been built up to issue 4 or what people can expect from issue 4?
Sure. So the first issue was sort of Prometheus kind of meeting the world again. It's the trick with all of these things is trying to say Olympus has fallen less than 3 times, because people just think of that Gerard Butler movie at this point. But we're almost past it, so I can start saying Olympus has fallen again. But the first two issues, Prometheus returns to the modern world, kind of starts showing us. I mean, the fun of any of these books is let's see the Pantheon, right? Let's see the take on Apollo. Zeus and all of them, but we tried to sort of find some more B-level characters and bring them to a place of prominence. Cerberus, the three-headed dog that guards the gates of hell, is one of my favorite characters I've ever written, one of my favorite designs I've ever had done. If you go to the Prometheus 4 page, you'll see some art with him in that weird mask. So we meet Apollo, we meet the boatman, Chiron, who was the boatman on the River Styx that you gave your 2 coins to so you could go to the afterlife. They kind of gave him bearings to Dionysus, the god of fun, who, believe it or not, in our modern day, there's quite a place for partying in our current society, so she's doing just fine. And she gave him, after quite the scuffle, the location of Zeus, who was the person that created Prometheus's imprisonment and who Prometheus believes will know where the flame of knowledge lies. So issue 4 is we open right up on Prometheus arriving at the retirement community that Zeus is holed up in. And then from there, it's a slugfest more than a conversation to find out what the hell happened.
That sounds fun. At a slugfest in a retirement home? What more could you want?
Love that kind of mythology, but in the way it's brought into modern day, it's almost like a Romeo and Juliet Shakespeare brought into today's world.
I see what you're saying. Like when like Leo a classic is made. Yeah. No, I see what you mean. I dig that. And Ryan had commented on the art. The art in this is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love it. Kind of gritty, but at the same point, very clear to make out what you're looking at. Not gritty to the point where you're like, what the fuck's that? I think we actually have...
Listen, they're staring at him right there.
We have an original Prometheus staring at us from the wall over here that Ryan sent us. Thank you again for that, Ryan.
Of course.
Almost makes me feel uneasy staring at him every week.
Yeah, and those flaming, soulless eyes.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's those eyes, or lack of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris really sells... One of the most important things about the comic is the smolder. That look of a man that's been in prison for how many thousands of years, finally getting out and being sort of... morally or sort of just having his will broken. So that's Chris just, it's one of those things, man, you can't write it. I can write you a paragraph about what that feels like, but the way that Chris draws it is just, it's a thing of its own.
It's a lot like the character I had in Fable, actually.
Let's see, does he drag anybody into, not in this one, but there is someone, somebody is dragged into an abandoned house in the finale, so you're not that far off, I guess.
Hey, I'll take it. So as far as the Kickstarter goes, you know, we've mentioned that you have hit your goal, but that does not mean that people shouldn't head over there and still get their hands on their copy. Are you doing any like stretch goals or anything like that?
Yeah, so we just announced our first one, which is a 1-for-1 variant cover by interior artist Chris Cheyenne, who does all our standard covers as well. It's very awesome. You know what? Actually, I'm going to send it over to you guys on Skype right now so you can look at it.
Hot diggity dog.
It might only be available for backers.
We get to see it here, folks. We get to, not you.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear you guys listen. Guys, describe it for everyone in vivid detail.
There it is, Jeremy. Click on that.
Open image. Wow.
Smoldering.
That is tight.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
All he does is smolder. But man, I gotta tell you, if anyone's listening to this, if you're into comics and you haven't given Kickstarter comics a try... It's just, it's so, one of the, man, I could be as negative as anybody. Go on the What If podcast and hear us talk about technology. What's it done to the world? Is it worth it? Is it not? Kickstarter comics are one of the things that make me such a staunch optimist because I truly believe that we're making a book that could be on the shelf, that it could be a mass market book. It's the same quality. We have it printed on with the great printers, RA Comics up in Sacramento. But people are just doing such awesome work that even if they haven't quite gotten the big break yet, they can still make professional quality stuff. And it's, you know, if you go to the Kickstarter page, you're going to see single panels that I've blown up that I think there are some really awesome speed lines, action moments, and there's these really quiet, potent character moments that kind of hit you all the same way, which is honestly one of my favorite parts about this whole thing. I'm just making really cool stuff with cool people. You know, I've kind of said before places, the best thing about backing a Kickstarter comic is indie creators live and die by every single page we publish. That there's, you know, I work 2 day jobs to support my comic empire. I have 9 books currently being drawn that'll be coming out through the next year. And every single one of mine, I don't make something unless I think it is the coolest thing I've ever done, which I think you can see in almost every page and almost every panel. Which is largely because I'm fortunate to work with such great artists.
We've seen it a million times over. Every time you're on the show, bringing quality stuff. And if you look at your track record with your Kickstarters, you know what you're doing. You know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah, this is number 10. 10 for 10.
Wow. Yeah. Are you still working on Lonesomes? Are you still doing Lonesomes?
Yeah, guys, Lonesomes will be relaunched as a graphic novel to bring the whole thing home. I think we're at 122 pages are fully drawn. We're just trying to decide when. It might be this October, funny enough.
Man.
Which I think I sent this to you guys. Now, this isn't good enough reason to listen to the What If podcast. Characters that we loosely pitched, I think it was the second time I was on here, are in the finale. Dreadburp and Calcium Claws.
Calcium Claws both. And Dreadburp.
Are you serious?
I remember we saw... Yeah,
so, if we had our canned air made Pokemon, Calcium Claws and Dreadburp, that's what they would say if they were...
Dreadburp.
I like that you guys immediately went, like, whenever it's something with, like, a nefarious-sounding name, it always has a very baritone voice.
Yeah, see?
Dreadburp. Yeah, it's always mean.
Let's hear Calcium Claws. How would that go?
I'm thinking that one's going to be something high.
Yeah, it's going to be Calcium Claws! Yeah.
There it is. That's what we should do. We should get listeners to draw up Dreadburp and Calcium Claws.
Hey, there we go.
We'll send you free shit if you do.
I got an artist designing sketch variants for the Kickstarter, so I'll get him to doodle you guys a little Calcium Claws.
Oh, that'd be awesome!
he's one of my students in my graphic novel class. He's so stinking talented. As soon as I said that, I was like, "Oh, Calcium Claws is so cool!" And then I said, "You know, he's immediately going to want to draw Dreadburp. Like Dreadburp is just going to be some weird frog that." Burps out nasty bubble things.
Dreadburp.
Man, I am excited. Don't worry. Yeah,
Team Olsen's is on it, guys.
Either one of them would be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's got to be like, you remember in the opening, it was always Gengar fighting, what was it, Nidorino for some reason, which is like a really weird mashup. Maybe we'll try to go for that little action. The Clash of the Titans, Dreadburp and Calcium.
Oh, my God. I will send you free books if you do that. Come on. That would be awesome.
You guys helping me out. Yeah, all right, well, actually, I'm seeing him on Wednesday, so I will keep you posted.
Oh, nice.
Both made the finale.
We got the artwork for, was it?
Dreadburp.
Was it Dreadburp?
Yes. Because I think...
Did I send you Calcium Claws? Somebody bought Calcium Claws if you guys don't have it, because I sold a cover that was that original art.
Noah, you got to send this to us. I've never seen this.
I wanted to put it on a shirt, but we didn't want to take that artist's...
artwork. It was somebody, like, it was one of your students, I think, at the time.
It was one of my students. He didn't give a shit. Go for it.
But, yeah, well, we had Dreadburp.
You sent him a t-shirt, you're more than even. Yeah, so I'm sending you right now. So they became two of our biggest villains, funny enough.
That's freaking awesome.
Calcium Claws.
Dreadburp and Calcium. They do sound like the Team Rocket equivalent, kind of, right?
I mean, the best part, you go back to the episode, you guys really just pulled those right out of your ass, and I was like, those are diamonds, fellas. I wasn't joking. I just sent you there's a big splash page where you can see Dreadburp and then Calcium Claws. That's our main villain, Virgil, and he's hanging on his hip.
Oh my God, this is insane. I can't wait to look at this. It's loading, but it's loading so slowly.
Yeah, that's the high res, man. That you could definitely throw on a t-shirt. We should be wrapping up. If it's not this fall, it'll probably be February 2020. It's just whether this or the Power Rangers book comes out first is really what it's between.
Okay, so Dreadburp being...
Yeah, the little hoppy... So the first one, or the file that's labeled, I think page 6, it's like a splash page.
Yes.
You see him hopping across the bottom there, cameoed in.
With the little green guy there?
The green guy in the air?
That's your green frog, Dreadburp.
Okay.
That's awesome.
And then the one that's labeled 0501, so that's the first page. You see Calcium Claws with that crazy... Dreadburp's in that one, too. Calcium Claws is hanging off his left arm, and then Dreadburp's down there between the big goat thing's
awesome.
Legs.
That's so fucking awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Guys, good ideas are good ideas.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
That is freaking cool. Thank you for sending those along. I might have to... is it okay if I cut these little characters out? So Calcium Claws is the bird.
Calcium Claws is the... It's the like sloth thing with the goat head on it.
Oh, hold up. I was looking at the wrong thing then.
There's one on his shoulder and there's one hanging off his arm. It's that weird sloth with the... with like the dead cattle skull on it.
Oh,
I see him there with his skull head. It's kind of a Cubone almost.
I'll have to find that original art.
He's gnarly.
Yeah,
look at him.
He is awesome looking.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's my student. He did. That guy's awesome.
All right. I'm going to have to put these in the cover art somehow.
Well, they'll probably be, we're designing the trade covers right now, so they'll probably be there somewhere too.
Should we not do that yet?
Oh, no, feel free. I think they were in the last issue at some point. I mean, if not, I don't know. Who cares? I mean, you're co-creators, right?
That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, but I should have hard copies for you guys. I mean, within the next 6 months, for sure.
I'm sitting here with a giddy smile on my face. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Something that kind of came from our heads is in a comic. We're making it, Jack. Yeah. We're making it.
One more step to us.
Dude, I mean, I'm lucky. Like I said, I have 9 books going. So, I spend about 2 hours a day just interacting with artists. And that's like, I get to feel that 10 hours a week.
Man.
Yeah, let's see what you cooked up this time. That's why it's a grind, but it's awesome.
That's freaking cool. I'm stoked. You got me smiling from ear to ear.
Those images are sweet too.
Yeah
really the artist did a great job. Our colorist really kind of leveled up his game. He done a couple issues of Deathstroke, but the last two we sort of changed the color aesthetic because it kind of gets a little more epic in the finale. You can tell with that kind of splash page. It's much more of the all-out kind of Pokemon brawl that I think people have kind of been wanting. Our colors really went for it, and it shows.
Man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I cannot wait to see the finished products. That's cool. So we have Prometheus number 4 running till October 10th. Yep. Is there anything else these people should know before heading over there and backing, or any other rewards they should be aware of incent them to go over?
Sure. I mean, biggest thing, I say it every time on any interview, all my books are printed here domestically. So I get the books within a week that I place the order. So long as Kickstarter gets me the funds fast-ish enough or on time enough, backers start getting books within 2 weeks of the project being done, which is something not a lot of other people can offer. So if you back it, you'll be getting it quite soon. At this point, the bundles in there with digital things and stuff like that, there's over 200 pages of material up for grabs between Prometheus, Lonesomes, The Axeman, The Crude Knight, I think, and my D&D anthology. Actually, with the D&D anthology, is over 400 pages of indie material up there. My favorite thing is we do artist editions of everything. Take the time to scroll down and look at some of the black and white pages because they're just epic and awesome. I call it pulp fantasy, which might be a genre of all my own. I'm not quite sure yet. But if it's a coin I termed, then it's mine, damn it. But it's pulp fantasy like no one else is doing. So check it out. I think you'll really dig it. It's a book for anybody that ever felt like the world just isn't quite what they thought it would be, quite truthfully. And the sorrow and the rage that kind of comes with that all the same, that Prometheus is going to – he's going to get in major God of War-like tussles with all the gods that survived the fall of Olympus. But more importantly, he's a man that's going to be kind of stripped of everything and have to reconcile that life isn't what he thought it was going to be, and how do you carry on after that?
And that's just something that, obviously, because your Kickstarter was funded so quickly, that's something that I think almost everyone in some way or another can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I find it very important to emphasize what Ryan has already said a couple times in this interview, is that the book is done. The book is done. If you back this, you're not waiting 1 to 2 years for a book to show up. You're going to get it pretty quick. And that's something I think you always deliver on, right? Right, Ryan? You always make sure that book is done, like you said, before that Kickstarter goes up.
Yeah, I've shipped 2 copies. I have 1 reader who's a dedicated reader in Kuwait, which is super awesome. And I've had a FedEx it to him 3 times before somebody at the post office stopped stealing it. But I will get you your book.
Really?
For damn sure. Yeah. Kuwait was tricky. Which like I had a guy in Australia get it before a guy got it in Canada. So also apparently Australian. Yeah.
Like, dude in Kuwait sitting on like a stack of 20. I'm going, that dumb bastard.
This is gold here.
He's selling them.
I hope so. Please do. I was trying to think. You made me think of something else, too, about how fast we get it out to people. Yep, can't think of it. Oh, you know what it is? I was going to say, quite truthfully, that, like I said, getting them all shipped within 2 weeks of being finished backing, you're going to get that book before Doomsday Clock ends. That's it. And that franchise, or that DC Comics event started over 1.5 years ago. So comic fans will know what I'm talking about. There's no crazy delays. You know, I cracked my skull in 2 places, tore my bicep, and broke my leg last year, which is why we delayed launching this book, so that you're not getting pictures of me stuck in a hospital somewhere with various parts of my body in pieces. We wait. We get rid of all the stress. And so it's really just a little indie publishing house that I'm running.
Man, nice. I'm jealous, man. You have it. You're firing on all cylinders. I wish I could do that. I can. I just need to put the time and effort into it that I haven't been giving as of late. But it's admirable, man. You've got a good thing going.
I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you, especially being here. This has been one hell of a fun episode. People can find Ryan on Instagram and Twitter at Mr. Ryan Comics. Where else should people be going other than the Kickstarter, of course?
If you go to my Twitter handle at Mr. Ryan Comics, MRRYAN Comics, that's where you'll get all my updates. You're going to see teases for, like I said, I have 9 books coming out within the next year, so you're going to see all kinds of exclusive looks and things like that. If you jump over to Facebook, we have an official Facebook page. If you just Google search Facebook Prometheus TFR for The Fire Remains, you'll find our official Facebook page. That's got all our character designs, behind the scenes stuff, and that's where you'll start seeing all the teases for issue 5, which is rapidly being drawn and will be launched sometime Q1 2020.
Wow.
Nice. Wow. Oh, yeah.
That's a schedule. That's, yeah, man.
Gotta be.
Yeah, I would say. Well, good on you, Ryan. And, man, thanks again for being here. Always a blast when you're here.
Oh, always happy to have a socially respectable excuse to talk fantasy, fellas.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com, where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some of our YouTube videos, and if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And once again, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And if you like what we're doing, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod, or you can just take the link on our website and become a patron for $5 a month. Get access to the Canned Air Patreon pod. We give you, the people, the power to control the episode.
We are your monkeys.
Yeah.
We will dance.
We'll dance for you. You just have to tell us what dance you want, and we'll do it. But, you tell us what you want to hear, and that's what we'll talk about. You're paying for it. Damn it, might as well be what you want to hear, right? So, once again, $5 a month, patreon.com/CannedAirPod. And if you're going to that Wizard World convention here in Columbus, or any other show for that matter, Canned Air, in the promo box at checkout, gets you a cool 10% off.
Cool 10.
I always describe it as cool, not a hot.
Mm-hmm.
Cool 10%. Because it's fucking cool, if you ask me. And what else? What If? Don't forget to find out check out our other show. What If? If you like what you've been hearing for the last hour, then you're going to love the show. This is the cast. This is the cast right here. So head over to whatifpod.com. You can check us out there. If you type Canned Air Productions into your podcast player of choice, you should find Canned Air and What If both show up. We are finding that if you just search What If, it's kind of confusing because there's like four or five other shows out there with What If in the title. Maybe What If Series,
that one should pop up.
But again, Canned Air Productions, I have found to be a surefire thing. And if you're ever in question, we're the one with the yellow text and the blue space background, so kind of hard to miss.
Think, what if these three guys did a whole nother podcast on alternate realities?
You don't have to wonder what if. It exists. It exists. It surely does. So, once again, whatifpod.com, and check us out. We ask stuff like, what if Bigfoot existed? What if people could fly? What did we just do? Well, upcoming Halloween one, what if vampires really existed? Fun conversation.
What if the Earth was flat?
We just did that one, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a fun one.
All right, I think that's going to do it for this week. So, until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And I'm Ryan Little.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Watch me ice skate.
Wait, come back. The ice could break.
Whoops. Help.
Quickly walk back to the edge.
Stop.
stop, you'll break through the ice.
Snow job!
Grab this branch. You should have been listening to Canned Air.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Snow job, how'd you get your name?
G.I. Joe.
You search Canned Air Productions in your podcast.
Pretty much I can't get past the whole pop culture in medieval stuff. Like,
all right, who was?
Here you go. I think maybe buffering. There's a blue wheel. It's a quarter of the way full. It's 4/8 full. It's 3/4 full. Bam, you got covered.
What was it like to be there for historical sports moments and unforgettable performances? To be behind the scenes? On PressBox Access, you'll hear from me, Todd Jones, and other sports writers about their experiences with the greatest athletes, coaches, and sports events of the past half century. We'll share some stories behind the stories, some big, some small, and some we've only told each other. Let us buy you a round on PressBox Access.